Welcome to CME on ReachMD. This activity titled Optimal Sequencing of ADCs in Endocrine Refractory Hormone Receptor Positive HER2 Negative Metastatic Breast Cancer is provided by Prova Education. Prior to beginning the activity, please be sure to review the faculty and commercial support disclosure statements as well as the learning objectives.
Welcome to this case-based educational series on sequencing antibody-drug conjugates or ADC therapies in endocrine-refractory, hormone-receptor-positive, HER2-negative metastatic breast cancer. In this first chapter, we'll explore the challenges of endocrine resistance. This is CME on ReachMD, and I'm Dr. Komal Jhaveri. And joining me is Dr. Javier Cortez.
Hi, Komal.
We'll start with the case, actually. We have a 54-year-old woman with a history of de novo metastatic breast cancer, ER 90%, PR 0%, HER2 1 plus by immunohistochemistry, which is involving bones, lungs, and liver. Her disease has progressed on letrozole with ribociclib, exemestane with everolimus, capecitabine, and most recently on paclitaxel. She has a good functional status and normal organ function. Dr. Cortez, I was wondering if you could talk about the challenges in determining the next steps when patients have failed endocrine-based combinations and are now on their chemotherapy journey. And then when we start the chemotherapies, what more can we do?
So thanks, Kamal. I think that's a very important question for the clinical practice. I think that, first of all, in my opinion at least, we have to try to understand which the mechanism of endocrine resistance might be. And although it is true that in many places, unfortunately, we are unable to get a liquid biopsy or a solid biopsy to try to understand different mechanisms, for example, mutations in the estrogen receptor gene 1 or PIK3CA mutations, whatever, I think that sometimes we might understand which the mechanism of resistance might be depending on the time the patients receive CDK4 and CDK6 inhibitors-based therapy. For example, we know today that depending on the duration of CDK4 and 6 inhibitors in the first-line setting, we might understand which mechanisms of resistance were involved. Just very briefly, about 20 to 25% of patients experience progressive disease during the first year of CDK4 and 6 inhibitors. And maybe the PIK3CA mutations, the RAF mutations, or alteration in different signaling pathways may be involved there. And the other way around, when this is higher or longer than a year, maybe the estrogen receptor gene 1 mutations might appear. So depending on this, we might decide if we continue to endocrine-based therapy plus different targeted agents alone, or we should discuss the role of chemotherapy to these patients.
Does the disease burden really have an impact on your treatment decision?
Well, that's a very good question. I think that it might help us, but not independently. So for example, if you have a patient for more than 3-4 years under palbo, ribo, abema, whatever, and they have liver metastasis, maybe I would reconsider continuing with endocrine therapy. And the other way around, if the tumor progression is very quickly, maybe even if the tumor burden is lower, maybe I would consider starting with the chemotherapy or with any other agents.
Thank you so much for that. And maybe you know, just so that we can think about this even further, you very well summarized that if you have an ESR1 mutation, you have another therapy, you have therapies, specifically targeting PIK3CA mutations. What about patients whose tumors don't harbor any mutations? How do you approach those and what kind of therapies do you offer at that instance?
Well, I think that we have beautiful data with everolimus plus exemestane or maybe fulvestrant as well and tamoxifen. We have three randomized trials, one of them randomized phase 3, Bolero 2. And these the benefit of everolimus is in both PIK3CA mutant and non-PIK3CA mutant tumors. So I think that I would consider, but again, depending on different clinical aspects, the duration of CDK, the amount of disease, but that's something that I would consider. For me, in my opinion, single agent endocrine therapy is something that could be considered, but for a very minimal number of patients.
I agree with you. I think the data from the MNO trial with elacestrant, you know, certainly was exciting for patients with ESR1 mutations, but I think the excitement is more, especially in those cohort of patients that stayed on their first-line therapy for a longer period of time, where single-agent endocrine therapy can really give you that prolonged duration of benefit. Otherwise, the 4 months progression-free survival is not necessarily that exciting. Along those lines, What are your thoughts about CDK4/6 inhibitor use beyond CDK4/6 inhibitor progression?
We have today three randomized phase two studies, and one of them was positive, which is the MAINTAIN. I don't know if the name is the best one, because really for the 90 plus percent of patients, they received palbociclib before and changed into ribociclib. There was a positive study. So maybe for selected patients, that's something that we could consider. We have two other trials, PACE and PALMIRA. In PACE, the great majority of patients received palbo and continue with palbo. And in PALMIRA, poor second line palbo after palbo, we did not observe any benefit of continuing palbociclib. We are all waiting a randomized phase three study with abemaciclib in patients who previously received palbo or ribo. So depending on this data, I think that this is something that we'll consider more and more in the future.
Thank you so much. I think, you know, we have many of these therapies. We're still figuring out the most optimal way of sequencing them. But needless to say, endocrine resistance, you know, we try and target with these therapies, but then eventually deal with endocrine refractoriness, where we then switch over to single-agent sequential chemotherapy. And then once we start doing that in that realm, we now have antibody drug conjugates that are already approved. So maybe a brief comment on what do you think about the role of antibody drug conjugates in this setting for hormone receptor positive breast cancer?
Well, I think that is very good news to see that these drugs have shown an improvement, not only in progression-free survival, but also in overall survival in patients who were previously treated with chemotherapy. And we have here two important clinical trials. DESTINY-Breast04, basically it explored the role of trastuzumab deruxtecan, an antibody drug conjugate against HER2, being topo 1 inhibitor, the payload. This drug was explored in second, third line, and the trial was clearly positive for both, as I said before, PFS and survival. We have a second study, TROPiCS-02, which explored another antibody drug conjugate, in this case, an anti-TROP2, also a topo 1 inhibitor as a payload, and trastuzumab govitecan. And this drug was explored in the third line or beyond against chemotherapy, also showing a nice improvement in overall survival. And what we can discuss is maybe one of the trials was conducted in second, third line, the other in third line or beyond. Different patient populations, it's very difficult to make a comparisons among these two trials, but both of them beautiful results in terms of overall survival.
Yeah, that is such exciting news for our patients, because I think prior to having these antibody drug conjugates, I think there was just one clinical trial actually led by you, the EMBRACE trial, where we saw overall survival for eribulin. And that was about 13 months with eribulin for third line patients. But this was, you know, predating the CDK4/6 inhibitor era. So essentially, after we've had the introduction of CDK4/6 inhibitors, we've never been able to show an overall survival benefit with systemic chemotherapy or antibody drug conjugates. And now that we have two of these drugs that really cause an overall survival benefit as well, has been very, very exciting to have as an option for our patients with hormone receptor positive disease.
That's totally correct, Kamala. And indeed, in the TROPiCS-02, it was a requirement to have received CDK4/6 inhibitors before. So we can formally say that after CDK, trastuzumab govitecan improves survival compared with chemotherapy, and the great majority of patients also received CDK in DESTINY-Breast04. So I think that we can say something very similar here, in the DESTINY-Breast04.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we will talk a lot more about exactly what patient population we think about when we think about DESTINY-Breast04 or TROPiCS-02, and how do we think about these drugs. But I think the point that, you know, the overall survival that we have seen, including with TROPiCS-02, where patients were so pre-treated and 98% had received prior CDK4/6 inhibitors, is rather impressive to at least have and now talk to our patients about, where we can say very comfortably that not only do we see at least a 5-year overall survival with first-line CDK4/6 inhibitors, but even when they are pre-treated and are now getting antibody drug conjugates, we're seeing overall survival benefits. So certainly a good time to be. Certainly more work needs to be done, but at least we're better off than what we were a few years ago when we didn't have this data. So thank you for that. This has been really great. Before we wrap up this first chapter, Dr. Cortes, any one key takeaway from this chapter that you'd like to highlight?
Well, I think that unfortunately, metastatic breast cancer continues to be an unmet need. We need more drugs. We need better and more combinations. We need to explore more the sequencing of these antibody conjugates. So good time for clinical research. But again, we should not forget that we have patients out of there that need us and need more and better drugs and combinations.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So in chapter two, we'll discuss the role of antibody drug conjugates in the treatment of endocrine refractory hormone receptor positive HER2 negative metastatic breast cancer. So stay tuned for that. Specifically, we'll talk about personalizing treatment by differentiating the antibody drug conjugate therapies. For those just tuning in, you're listening to CME on ReachMD. I'm Dr. Komal Jhaveri, and here with me today is Dr. Javier Cortez. We're discussing optimal sequencing of antibody drug conjugates in endocrine refractory, hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative metastatic breast cancer. So welcome back to this chapter, and we'll explore a case of progressive endocrine refractory, hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative metastatic breast cancer here. So let me start with this case. We have a 61-year-old woman with history of T3N1M0 grade 2 invasive ductal cancer of the right breast that is ER 90%, PR 20%, and HER2 negative, which is IHC 0. She was treated with a curative intent, but developed recurrence involving the bone 4 years later while receiving adjuvant anastrozole therapy. Bone biopsy that was performed confirmed metastatic carcinoma, again ER positive, this time around 50%, PR negative, and HER2 remains negative with IHC 0. She was treated with endocrine-based therapy, which included fulvestrant and palbociclib, and then, upon progression on that regimen, received tamoxifen with everolimus. A liquid biopsy that was done at that time did not show any mutation in ESR1 or PIK3CA. She developed progressive disease in the liver and was started on capecitabine. 8 months after receiving capecitabine, restaging scans show progressive disease in the bone and in the liver. Dr. Cortez here, what do you think would be an appropriate next step here? Would you think about utilizing a treatment regimen and move forward with a treatment option? Or would you consider a re-biopsy in this case to see if that might help further understand what would be the best appropriate next treatment option?
Well, first of all, I think that this is a patient who behaves relatively as we might expect from hormone receptor positive HER2 negative breast cancer. She received palbociclib based therapy in the first line setting, following by tamoxifen and everolimus. And the first line chemotherapy was CAPE, and she was on treatment with CAPE for about 8 months. So I think this is something that we would have expected. So the first question is, this patient did have a liquid biopsy, and we did not observe any PIK3CA nor estrogen receptor gene 1 mutation at the time. So I think, at least in my opinion, that if we do not have available clinical trials at this time, I don't think if adding a second liquid biopsy will add a lot to the patient care. So I think that it would be not completely necessary. The patient received CAPE in the first line setting, so I would proceed to antibody drug conjugates. And I think that this is a second line treatment in the chemo world. So I would consider in this case, because the HER2 was 0+, I think that sacituzumab govitecan, based on the TROPiCS-02, would be good enough. According to some of the guidelines, the requirement is to have received 2 prior systemic lines of therapy. So this would apply to this patient, but it's true that according to the clinical trial, it was required to have 2 prior lines of chemotherapy. So I think that it's reasonable to discuss about sacituzumab govitecan. Finally, if we get another biopsy and we find HER2 1+ or 2+, the so-called HER2 low expression, I think that this patient would also apply to DESTINY-Breast04. So maybe trastuzumab deruxtecan would be a very good option as well. So for me, it's very clear, I would go for antibody drug conjugate.
I completely agree with you. And yes, I have done both, where sometimes when I'm really worried about the disease and want to get started and not want to delay initiation of therapy with another biopsy, maybe I would just get this started with sacituzumab, given both biopsies so far were IHC0. And in certain other cases, I have gone and seen if somehow the dynamic nature of HER2, we will find 1+ or 2+, and because of HER2 low, offer them T-DXd. So I've done both, but I completely agree with you. Switching to antibody drug conjugate seems like the most appropriate treatment course here.
The point here is, which is the best option? So trastuzumab deruxtecan or sacituzumab govitecan. So first of all, I think that both of them are good approaches to the patient, but it is true for trastuzumab deruxtecan today, we need to have a HER2-low. You know very well that we are exploring in DESTINY-Breast06 in the first-line setting if those patients with ultra-low tumors also benefit from trastuzumab deruxtecan. But today, we do not have enough data to suggest that trastuzumab deruxtecan will work in HER2-0. So maybe in this patient, I would go for trastuzumab govitecan for this reason.
So just expanding on what you were already mentioning, you know, the DESTINY-Breast04 trial did look at trastuzumab deruxtecan, where we have patients who could have had a CDK4/6 inhibitor. So in that case, about 70% of these patients on DESTINY-04 had received prior CDK4/6 inhibitors. What was really important to recognize is this is only for patients with HER2-low tumors. So these were HER2-low tumors. The HER2-low could have been detected in the primary tumor. It could have been detected in the metastatic tumor, highlighting the point that as long as you have some tissue that did show HER2-low, that patient could have been a candidate for trastuzumab deruxtecan-based therapy. And 480 patients, which were HR-positive HER2-low, which is really the natural prevalence that we know of HER2-low for HR-positive disease, and 58 patients about HR-negative and HER2-low were included. And both of these cohorts, the primary endpoint was specifically for the HR-positive cohort. Exploratory analyses looked at the HR-negative cohort, but in both cohorts, we did see a statistically significant improvement in both progression-free survival and in overall survival, leading to the approval of this agent for both of these patient populations. And so we really think about utilizing this drug as long as the patient have had at least one line of chemotherapy, as in this case, this woman would have had one line of capecitabine, but could have offered this even in the third line as long as they've had only two lines of chemotherapy. So TROPiCS-02 led to the approval of sacituzumab govitecan, which again is a TROP2-directed antibody drug conjugate. In that trial, majority of the patients, as you pointed out, had received prior CDK4/6 inhibitors. So that was about 98% of the patients. They were required to have a minimum of two lines of chemotherapy, no more than four lines of chemotherapy. So really pre-treated patients. While we saw an improvement in PFS and OS, the benefit in PFS was rather modest when we look at the numbers. It was a 1.5 month delta of benefit over the standard of care arm. But when you look at the landmark analyses, we know that a larger proportion of patients were progression-free and were surviving in the sacituzumab arm compared to the physician choice chemotherapy arm. So for such a pre-treated patient population, including median three prior lines of chemotherapy, I thought that was clinically meaningful and certainly something that we do. I know you pointed out a very important thing that some guidelines now allow to use sacituzumab even early on in the treatment course. And yes, that's true. I think we think about utilizing for HER2-low tumors T-DXd, but those tumors which are IHC0 or for patients who are not candidates for T-DXd, such as those with baseline interstitial lung disease or pneumonitis, where you would worry about that side effect from T-DXd, sacituzumab could be used in the second line the way we think about T-DXd as well. For our patient that we were talking about, for IHC0, sacituzumab is a good option that we can offer our patients. But it's interesting to see how this has really shaped up our guidelines currently for second line and beyond with the antibody drug conjugates.
Let me add just two quick comments. The first one is, don't forget that HER2 is a very dynamic biomarker, and you might have HER2-0 for two or three biopsies, and afterwards to have HER2-1+, 2+. So that's something that we should look at. And the second aspect, which is important in my opinion, is that these two drugs are being explored in the first line chemo setting, TROPiCS-06, DESTINY-Breast06, trastuzumab deruxtecan, and ASCENT-07, trastuzumab govitecan. So maybe in the next future, we will be able to see these drugs just after endocrine therapy.
Absolutely. I wonder if you could briefly comment on the adverse event profile and the dosing scheduling for the two antibody drug conjugates that we have.
These drugs are different in terms of the administration. We should not forget that trastuzumab deruxtecan is being administered once every 3 weeks with specific adverse events. I would like just to highlight maybe neutropenia, nausea, and vomiting, which could be very high in the range of 70% of patients having any grade of nausea. And also asthenia fatigue, something that we might observe in the range of 50% of patients. And of course, the very well-known ILD pneumonitis in DESTINY-Breast04 was reported in about 12% of patients, being grade 5 in 3 of them. So 0.8% of patients, unfortunately, did have grade 5 event, passed away as a consequence of this important adverse event. Regarding TROPiCS-02, regarding Zaitstrumab Govitecan, different toxicity profile. Very important to highlight the neutropenia, any grade in the range of 70-71%, being grade 3 or higher in 52% of patients. Maybe I would like also to highlight diarrhea. Diarrhea was observed in about 62% of patients, being grade 3 in the range of 10%. So different toxicity profile. Important to remember that Zaitstrumab Govitecan should be administered on day 1 and 8 every 3 weeks. So based on also all these aspects, maybe we might also have some aspects to discuss with the patient if we prefer one of the other agent.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think sometimes it is such an important patient-physician decision-making process when, you know, you have a justification to try and think about both of these. But maybe when you talk about the dosing schedule, when you talk about the toxicity profiles, if patients will have a preference. This has been really great, I think, Dr. Cortes. Before we wrap up, what's your one key takeaway from this chapter that you might want to share?
I think that antibody-drug conjugates are here to stay. And if possible, we have to do all our best to give the opportunity to our patients to receive at least one of them when needed.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to the next chapter. So in chapter 3, we'll be discussing patient selection for antibody-drug conjugate therapy. So stay tuned for that. So let's get into the case. We have a 56-year-old woman with history of T3N1M1, grade 2 invasive lobular cancer of the left breast that is ER positive more than 95%, PR positive at 50%, HER2 negative at IHC 1+, and a FISH ratio of 1.1. At diagnosis, she had a biopsy-proven metastatic disease involving mediastinal lymph nodes. ER was positive at 95%, PR positive at 75%, HER2 negative at IHC 0, and FISH ratio was 1.2. Next-generation sequencing revealed mutations in PIK3CA and CDH1, and no pathogenic germline variants were identified. She received endocrine-based therapy with letrozole and ribociclib, followed by fulvestrant with alpelisib. She then developed progressive disease and received weekly paclitaxel. Restaging scans show progressive disease with peritoneal carcinomatosis and pleural thickening. Biopsy showed invasive lobular cancer that is ER 70%, PR 40%, HER2 negative at IHC 0, and a FISH ratio of 1.1. She was initiated on treatment with trastuzumab deruxtecan, and after 8 months, had progression. Dr. Cortes, if you can talk about what factors led to the choice of trastuzumab deruxtecan, and then what do you think about treatment options for this patient after progression on trastuzumab deruxtecan that she's had?
It is interesting to see that the biopsy scored 0 for HER2, but we should not forget that this patient did have, at the very beginning, HER2 1+. And as we have discussed many, many times, if we have any prior biopsy being HER2 1+ or 2+, this patient might qualify to the use of trastuzumab deruxtecan. And when we see the data, this patient did have a progression-free survival in the range of 8 months, which means that the drug works. Were here. So unfortunately, patients who received and progressed after an antibody-drug conjugate is a clear unmet need. So my first comment is we have to try to find clinical trials to optimize the patient journey from the future. But if no, the obvious question is, what is better, to continue with a second antibody-drug conjugate or to jump into the classical chemotherapy? We do not have this question answered. I think that it depends case by case, patient by patient. For me, it's not very clear if one option is superior to the other one. My personal opinion is to continue with chemotherapy and maybe considering a second antibody-drug conjugate with the same payload after at least one line of chemotherapy between. We do not have the answer for that, again, but the data we have basically for San Antonio 2023 observed that the second antibody-drug conjugate did not have the same benefit compared with the first one. It is not very clear if ZASI followed by T-DXd is better or worse than T-DXd followed by ZASI. I think that we do not have enough data to suggest that one is superior to the second one, but clearly the data with the second one is not as good as the data with the first one.
Clearly a lot more work that needs to be done here. to best understand exactly how to optimize sequencing for these antibody drug conjugates. Should an intervening sandwich chemotherapy really be a way to deal with this? Will that truly resensitize the tumor just because it's a different mechanism of action? Or will it necessarily not make a big difference? Something that we're trying to learn actually from research efforts, including prospective trials, such as TRAID-DXT. So that's a trial that is actually looking at trastuzumab deruxtecan and another TROP2 ADC for which we have data. Similarly, we also have another research effort through the Translational Breast Cancer Research Consortium, where we're doing a registry for patients who would have received trastuzumab deruxtecan and then get trastuzumab or vice versa. While we're waiting for all of this, this might be an approach we will still want to consider for our patients in clinic, because our bar with systemic chemotherapy is so low that even though the ADC2 PFS is lower than ADC1, it might still be superior than a chemotherapy drug, because these ADCs have been better than chemotherapies, is what we have shown in so many trials.
I feel like we have, unfortunately, many unanswered questions today. If the question is if antibody drug conjugates might work in a sequence way, the answer is clearly yes. I think that we have to understand, as you said before, from the clinical trials which are ongoing, which is better, to change the payload, to change the antigen, to change both. So I think that, of course, there are patients out of there that will benefit for the sequencing, no doubt. Is it for everybody? Clearly not. The point is how to define will benefit or not. You made a very good point. If we understand the mechanisms of resistance, we will be able to optimize therapy. Unfortunately, this belongs to the clinical research, not to the clinical practice. So we need to understand much better how these drugs work in sequence.
Yeah, I think needless to say, we really need more. So one is to optimize our current drugs and figure out what's the best sequence. Two, to try and bring them sooner in the treatment paradigm. So DESTINY-06 and ASCENT-07 are good examples. Would utilizing them in the first line really have an impact on outcomes? And three, adding newer drugs and understanding the resistance mechanisms for these current drugs, such that we can now start using different novel antibody drug conjugates for our patients and continue to further improve and have an impact on outcomes for our patients. So I think so important to have that. I know this drug is not approved yet, but we did see the results of the TROPION-Breast01 trial. I'm just wondering, how are you thinking about those data?
So as you know, the randomized phase 3 study with atopotamab deruxtecan has been exploring second, third line. We observed an improvement in progression-free survival, but data in terms of overall survival is still immature, so we cannot formally say that it improves survival. So the data in terms of the hazard ratio was quite similar to TROPICS-02. But again, we are talking second, third line, in TROPICS-02, third, fourth, fifth line. So it's different patient population, but the data are very consistent. So these drugs work in this setting. The point is even more complex, because now trastuzumab is moving into the first line setting, trastuzumab deruxtecan also to the first line setting. So what will happen if we have data in terms of survival with atopotamab in the second, third line? So I think that we have to wait and see what happens with survival, with the first line treatment options we will have.
Needless to say, exciting data, exciting days. We really have to do a lot more still in terms of waiting for newer drugs and understanding how to best utilize our current drug options. But I'd say at this time today, I just want to thank the audience for listening in. And thank you, Dr. Cortez, so much for joining me and for sharing all your valuable insights. It was really great speaking with you today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Kumar.
You have been listening to CME on ReachMD. This activity is provided by Prova Education. To receive your free CME credit or to download this activity, go to reachmd.com/Prova. Thank you for listening.